is good. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I just want to remind you that we all have the potential to be sexually free, to satisfy ourselves and our partners, and to reach pinnacles of sexual joy. Yes, each of us has that potential, whatever our age or the status of our relationship. And here to help sort all of this out in some brilliant ways is my friend and colleague, Dr. Linda DeVillers. Welcome to the program once again, Linda. It's so good to have you back.
Thank you so much, Diana.
And your book, we just saw each other at ASEC, which stands for American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And you gave a presentation about touch, and we talked a little bit about that, well, quite a lot about it, April the 15th, the last time you were on this program this year. So I would like for you to give kind of an overview, a brief overview of your ASEC presentation. And, you know, we, Dr. Linda and I will discuss love touch, one of her important chapters in her book, Love Skills, a fun, upbeat guide to successful relationships. And then we're going to talk about love talk, go on to talking more about love touch, and then tips for anxious moments. These are all really important. So, but an overview, because I know your presentation was very successful.
You know, I'm delighted to say it was. I was a little bit amazed how many people did come up to me in elevators and the hallways and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did, and I think the reason it was so well received, is that I really did a broad umbrella look at touch and our need for it. I started out with obviously our essential need for it and that it really is a life and death proposition, and I covered the classic studies that support that view. And I went into the various kinds of touch receptors that we have and the sensations that are evoked by those receptors. And I pointed out that we don't actually have a pleasure touch receptor in the sense of a sensory nerve organ, but we do perceive touch in all sorts of ways, including the perception of pleasure. I covered some of the multiple interpretations that people can have for touch, which might include differences based on gender or cultural background, even religious background, and where we live. And I discussed, which I know I did on your show before, why I so much prefer the term caressing.
Yes.
Sensate focus.
Caressing exercises.
Yes.
Versus sensate focus. I like it better, too.
It's just more descriptive. It really highlights the nurturing and connecting of those exercises. And then I discussed, because I was talking at that time to a clinical audience, I discussed both the, obviously, the benefits of these exercises, their limitations, and how in a therapeutic setting they have to be chosen wisely and introduced at the correct time and so forth. And I ended with what I called basic keys to helping couples experience sensuality, sexuality, and pleasure. And I even introduced, shall we try it right here and now, exercise, which was amusing because some people were very receptive and others, believe it or not, even in the therapeutic community, were a little skittish to actually touch.
Oh, expand. That's interesting. I'm so sorry I missed your presentation. There were various reasons for it. Of course, I got to see you there at the,
right.
We all had lunch together, but what happened with,
happened
so here you've got a bunch of therapists and educators and yet some were skittish.
Well, you know, we have that expression called walk the talk.
Yes.
So 5 or 10 minutes before it was over, I said, so, you know, I was thinking, I do have an exercise that involves touch, and it's in my book, and it's one of them that isn't as common in the therapeutic world, and it involves whether you do it as an individual, in other words, it's a solo touch exercise, or it's a partnered exercise. And it involves getting a variety of different objects of different textures and shapes and so forth, and running them each by all parts of your body one at a time. You know, so you might have a makeup brush, or you might have a fork, or a flower, a scarf, any object that's easily liftable. And I had intended to show up with enough paper clips for everybody because I thought, hey, those are small. I can introduce them to the idea that it doesn't matter what object you talk about. Could a paperclip run over the length of your body feel good? I happen to think it could. So since I didn't have that, I said to the audience, I said, most of you probably have a pen or pencil. And I was thinking that you could pair up and just try this a little bit on each other. You know, pick the arms, avoid the privates. And apparently there were about three different pairs that actually did this, and there were about 50 people in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And one or two others actually took the object and used it on him or herself. But I just got feedback afterwards from one of them who did it, who said, you know, that was really fun and cool, but I sure noticed how everybody else around me was really concerned about doing this. And
well, that's fascinating. You know, I would assume that our group of many seasoned, some a little newer clinicians and educators would be more open to an experience and experiment like this.
But, you know, I caught them by surprise a little bit, and I was inviting them to be a little bit vulnerable, and its odds are fairly high that they were sitting next to somebody that they might not know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to say. I would say the audience was about 50-50. There were quite a few younger people, but there were also a number of seasoned people because both kinds of people approached me afterwards about
mm-hmm. Yes.
So, anyway, it was just an amusing kind of situation.
And revealing.
Yeah.
And your book is just so wonderful, Love Skills. Now, people, I recommend to you that you get this book. It's well organized. It's got all kinds of, I'm going to read a blurb on the back of your book.
Sure.
Carla Bauer. As a sex therapist and educator, I recommend love skills to clients and students to enhance their sexual relationships. The book provides a step-by-step program for sexual fun, adventure, and growth that is respectful of oneself and one's partner. That's, you know, she gave you a nice overview on the book.
Right. And so, let me add that
yes.
Actually she and Robert Crooks are the authors, co-authors of a very, you know, well-known basic human sexuality textbook. And they
mm-hmm.
put one of my exercises in their several editions of their textbook.
Yes, and let me let the audience know that you have specialized, Dr. Linda DeVillers has specialized in sexuality and relationships for over 25 years. She's in the Los Angeles area. She's a psychologist and an ASEX certified sex therapist and, of course, a sex educator. And you teach graduate students and undergraduate students. You may be on a summer break at this point, which...
Actually, I have... I just finished mm-hmm. my undergrad classes last week, and
mm-hmm.
I have a summer graduate course.
So, and then you're in private practice. So
yeah.
I feel we're really fortunate to have you, and Dr. Linda agreed to return again to this program July the 1st. So we'll continue our discussions then because there's so much to talk about. So I appreciate the overview of your AFEC presentation. And so let's talk about Love Talk, which is at the beginning of your book, because you and I both know as sex therapists that so often we have to do psychotherapy before we can do sex therapy, that if the couple is not communicating, then they're not going to even want to go have sex.
And I want to clarify, I agree absolutely that basic communication is very needed.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons I wrote Love Skills, however, was a lot of books out there that talked about basic relationship communication skills, but they didn't really do a good job. In fact, they didn't cover the topic of how do you talk about sex with a partner.
Yes, you're right. You're right. I sometimes, and you do such a good job, but I sometimes get couples to start by sharing the funny stuff. Because the sexual messages that we come across as young people are often funny, and they also sometimes have some shame and prohibition. So I ask them to sit down together with a paper and pen and make a list of three funny, scary, or just mistaken things that they were taught about sex.
That is a great approach. I really like that.
Good. You can use it, too.
Yes, I shall.
And how old, you know, to get all the details in. How old were they? What were the circumstances? Did you overhear it, or were you just talking to somebody? Because some of the early messages are really strange, and this is why I do the program Love, Lust, and Laughter. And this is coming up, well, I guess it's 4.5 years. It might even be, I think it's 4.5 years on Progressive Radio Network. But the media, of course, is a great way to get out good, solid information. And people have better sex, as you know, and I know, if they have more information, more knowledge.
Of course. What I love about your little approach there is that you're spinning something that potentially, you know, was harmful to them, but you're spinning it in a sex positive way.
Oh,
really,
thank you. Yes.
And that laughing at it's sort of like saying playfully goodbye to something that wasn't helpful.
Ah, yes, yes. You know, it's very interesting how people got their first messages about sex. And I know I was lucky because my mother and my father gave us the facts of life as we drove, well, part of the way, driving from San Francisco back to Los Angeles. And, I was in fifth grade, and I was just astounded when I heard my father say, yes, the penis goes in the vagina.
Oh, wow.
And he's just, and I'm looking out the window, and my mother would turn and say, oh, Diana, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. This is something very beautiful. Of course, the caveat that the parents gave was very beautiful within a marriage.
Uh-huh.
But still, we got the information.
That's great. That's really great.
Do you remember how you learned?
I that sounds like a more intriguing way. I, too, was blessed with parents that were forthright with information.
Yeah. Good.
And used correct terms.
Uh-huh.
So yes. Kind of exceptional. And then somewhere, I don't know that it was fifth grade, the penis-vagina part, I probably got that more when I was 12 from my mother, and I got the, you know, the menstrual cycle
menstrual
information.
Cycle. Mm-hmm.
And she did. She set me down and she said, there's some things I want to let you know about.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was a physician, and so he was also, he wasn't the giver of the talk, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
He was a definite resource.
Mm-hmm.
And when the time came, he was actually the person that wrote the first prescription for birth control pills for me. I was graduating college at the time.
Yep.
But that's the way it came about.
Well, I just heard a story from a client. She befriended a young college woman from India.
Mm-hmm.
And she was young. No, she wasn't even college. She was beginning high school. So she started her menstrual cycle while in the United States, and she thought she was dying because nobody had ever told her about it.
Oh.
I mean, there tends to be very little sex education in India, so... And this program is often listened to in India. Oh, and that reminds me. I've heard from some gay listeners, and they complain, or this one person complained, that the show seemed to be more heterosexually oriented. And your book really, and in fact, I think you say it somewhere.
Yes. I went to a lot of energy and effort. I have a joke. I call myself a lexophile with lexophilic tendencies. The word I made up. I don't like the word wordsmith. But
you are. You are wonderful. And but go on.
Words. And I wanted it to be orientation free.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that's not as easy. It's easier said than done.
Yes.
But I really did. I continued to reuse the word like partner or lover.
Yes.
Instead of using he or she to avoid that. And so I have had gay and lesbian clients really be happy with the book. But I would be the first to say, you know, there are books out there that very specifically target gay and lesbian couples, which some gays and lesbians would prefer.
Yeah.
I could also add, though, that what's very curious to me is that lots of the books written for gays and lesbians are written about how to have a relationship or the, you know, the obstacles you're going to run into, the this and that. And very few of them actually, in fact, I don't know of any offhand, that deal with sexual dysfunction in gays and lesbians.
Well, that's unfortunate because they do have...
not have a monopoly on this.
Yeah.
Now, what references we'll talk about will be issues of sexual interest, which it doesn't happen to be the same thing, though, as actual sexual dysfunction. And so I actually think my book is useful for introducing very slowly... and as you said, you know, systematically these various exercises that can help people who do have some difficulties, you know, overcome them. And you probably noticed that I never use the word dysfunction. I don't think you'll find it in the book.
Oh, that's right.
Anywhere.
You don't. Good. Yeah.
It's not there. It's just, it's not what I wanted. I wrote it, you know, it's officially, it's a sexual enrichment book.
Mm-hmm.
Use it with clients who have real live difficulties all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So.
Well, thank you for, and I hope that our gay listeners out there, gay and lesbian listeners, will take note. And I'm trying to stay a little more aware, and your book really is good. And this is your fifth edition of Love Skills, right? A fifth?
Yes.
Yeah. Expanded, revised, yes. Okay. And it really is such a well-organized book with lots of really useful information. So you talk in Love Talk about vertical and horizontal love talk. And could you... explain.
Those are some more examples of I like fun language.
Yes, it's good. It's really good. Vertical and horizontal.
You could also call it in bed, out of bed. But the vertical means, you know, somehow we are sitting or standing or we're not horizontal in bed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's conversations that I think couples need to have before they ever land up in bed. Or after they have an ongoing sexual relationship going, they still may need to be sharing, you know, there's a little bit of feedback I'd like to give you, or I'd like to discuss with you ways we might expand our, you know, sex activities or whatever. You know, it could be positive, negative things. And I believe those conversations need to take place not as part of foreplay, and definitely not part of afterglow. It's really not good to do the, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking right after a lovemaking session.
So it could potentially could contaminate at least a nice time, and it can be better, but don't do it right after or during.
It's different if we're saying
to critique
the post-coital period is about, oh, that was wonderful, I feel amazing. That obviously that's great, but I'm talking about, you know, there's something I wanted to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
That should be separate. And horizontal is another difficulty that so many people have, and this definitely applies to people of all orientations and even gender orientations.
Yeah.
It's the fact that a lot of people rely too much on nonverbal communication during lovemaking. And so they're just kind of hoping. In fact, in the straight world, I've nicknamed it, I think a lot of women wait, hope, and pray that their partner will do what they like. And they also get involved in the mythology, if he loved me, he would know what to do.
Oh, yes, I call that avoid psychic sex.
Right. And so the horizontal talk aspect of the book is addressing, how about, you can do this as a vertical exercise, but what kinds of things would be helpful during lovemaking? And there's different kinds. There's what I call soft suggestions, or there's sweet nothings. Yes, there's naughty talk. I think a lot of people especially if they're uncomfortable with more risque talking, avoid all talking because they think that's the only kind that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even things like, I'd love it if you would, and fill in the blank. Or could I get on top now?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kind of stuff that is nice to have happening during the lovemaking process.
You have a really good exercise. I mean, this is so practical, and people can take these exercises. Some people may need to go to a professional, but others could use these exercises. So this is Sexcessful Love Talk Exercise, Exploring Each Other's Erotic Vocabulary.
Right, and you know, that is very much a begin at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people who say, oh, that is so elementary, I do not need that. My experience, though, is that, surprisingly, guesstimating, I'd say 75% of people think they know the words that their partner prefers, but they're a little off base, or maybe quite a bit off base.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we want to know, what words does a man want used when his penis is referred to?
So you've got things like, if I ever use a sexual word that bothers you, what I'd like you to do is...
Right.
So then you've got the words for my genitals I like the best are, and then
right.
the least are.
Right.
And you go through the body, breasts, best, and least, buttocks. The words for intercourse I like best are.
Right.
I mean, some people, and I can say this on the... It's not real radio. It is radio, but it's
here.
So some people really object to the word fucking for intercourse.
Right.
But others find it a real turn on. So you got to find out.
And you know, it could even be, hey, I like both. I like both.
Ah, yes, depending.
Many years ago, I did a survey with a college class.
Mm-hmm.
And I... what I was doing was asking them, okay, when you use the word I like to fuck,
mm-hmm.
I had them go through something called a semantic differential. Did that mean, was that hard or soft? Was that fun, raunchy? What was it? And then I had them go through making love, and all of these different potential expressions. And what you found out was that they weren't all good or bad. It was just that they connoted something a little bit different.
Exactly. And so the circumstances were important.
Exactly.
And some of the more, the dirty talk words.
Yes.
Can fit better when people are highly aroused.
Yes.
And, of course, that's important for so many things, to be highly aroused. But, so we have a few more minutes. Let's talk about it before our break, and then I think after the break we'll talk more about love touch, and especially hands, feet, and face. Return to that. But you have a very good vertical love talk exercise using phrases to share turn-ons and turn-offs, and
right.
Using I statements,
right,
and not criticisms, and
right,
that is really important because so many people have been shamed about sex in their earlier years, and it may trigger something. So talk more about that. You do a very good job in your book.
Well, you know, what I've done there actually is taken John Gottman's Principles of Good Communication.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
He's one of those people who's notorious for not actually talking about sex.
I know. They're beginning to
and
a little
I was
more. But
aware of his before people even knew about him. But anyway, I've taken those principles of using the I statements, avoiding why. You know, why is a recipe for putting somebody
mm-hmm.
on the fence. Avoiding the words always and never and
mm-hmm.
should and all of that stuff. But then I also developed these, you can either call them door opening phrases or sentence stems. So you start out with things like, what really turns me on is,
mm-hmm.
and each partner is going to provide an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I personally tweaked it toward the positive, you know. What brings me to orgasm is, and I find this is one of the real bread and butter exercises, and people can trade who goes first when they
mm-hmm.
answer these. They skip if it's, you know, too dicey for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, once they see the hang of what these little beginnings of sentences are, they can make up their own.
You yes, of course.
Tweak and make up phrases that something I think I'd like to try, but I'm not sure is.
Mm-hmm.
Or the best experience I ever had with you was, you know. And
yeah, that's, you know, that's a very good one because I often get my couples to recall a really exciting experience.
Exactly.
And what was going on? What were some of the circumstances in place? Did
right.
they have, was it, the, what time of the day was it? Were they rested? Did they have enough privacy? All of those things, what conditions were in place? But I'm looking at your book here. You've got some other, you know, finish the sentence. It's so good. When I make love, I like to. Something I think that would improve our sex life is, well, I think you said that one already. And this is good, too. Something I saw or read recently about sex that intrigued me and could pertain to us is.
Yeah.
That's a great one because a lot of people are afraid, especially women, my partner will think that I'm too experienced. I know too much.
I got this from the neighbor next door.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a much safer source, and it's very common. You know, we
yes.
do hear things or see things on the Internet, et cetera.
You know, I had one couple where I had an individual session with her and with him, as I sometimes do. I'm sure you do, too, just to get each of their individual stories. And she said, I'm so nervous about telling him what I want that I tell him I had a dream. and I had a dream, and this is what went on in the dream. And
I bet that was very effective, actually.
Actually, it was.
Yeah.
And he did pay attention. Well, we're going to go to our half past the hour break. Martin is our producer. I'm so glad Martin's on board. And when we come back, we're going to talk, Dr. Linda DeVillers and I will talk about love touch. And we're going to especially, we did that on April 15th, but we're going to talk a little more about hands, feet, and face. And so stay with us and more talk. And then at the very end, we're going to talk about tips for anxious moments. So you'll want to stay tuned. Thank you.
Cosa leggerai? Con che libro affascini il tuo cuore? E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore? Ma i tuoi piedi
This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And my friend and colleague, Dr. Linda DeVillers, is my guest. We have known each other since 1991 when we both were at the World Congress for Sexology in Amsterdam. Wasn't that a wild time?
Yes, that really was. It was a great trip.
And, you know, it's so informative, and we had some wonderful field trips because Amsterdam is so open, sexually speaking. And it was at that conference that a Norwegian publisher asked me to do some, I told him my idea about research on a group that had never been done before. And these are the flip side, the guy geishas, the Japanese hosts. So I made several trips to Japan in the early mid-90s and then did write the story. And, the reason I'm bringing this up now is I pulled this story out and I'm looking at a very erotic foot massage, and I would like to just share it. I did give these Japanese hosts, Club AI is Club Love, a questionnaire that pulled for very specific sexual attitudes and behaviors, and was translated into Japanese, my questionnaire. And so I had a meeting with all of these guys, and they were very idealistic and but really wanted to focus on the pleasure. So they would meet at the club, they would eat, they would drink, they would dance, and sometimes they would make a sexual liaison, and then they would, it was in Kabukicho area, which is the sex district in Tokyo, and sometimes they would go on to a sexual relationship. And as I said, these are like guy geishas, the hosts. So I had talked to one guy, and I'm going to read from my paper now. I had to embellish a little bit of this, truth be known, because I wasn't there. But anyway, I got some ideas. So this is one of the guys, and he was with Michiko. And they went to one of the love hotels nearby. After a few minutes, I gently withdrew from between her lips and pulled her to the edge of the bed. I had already placed a large bowl of warm water on the floor beside me, and soon I lapsed into the tender rhythm of bathing Michiko's delicate feet. The fragrance of lemon soap filled the room. When I patted her feet dry, I put the bowl aside and knelt in front of her again. As she sighed deeply, I nibbled her flesh, going up from her newly scented feet to the softness of her inner thigh. That's probably enough erotic reading for this program. But bathing feet can be very erotic and very, it can really be very relaxing, too.
Right.
Talk about your exercises. I'm looking at your book. You call them caressing exercises, which is a much better term.
Right.
But talk, let's start since I read,
well,
read the
I heard
paper.
What the geisha did is in part the exercise that I do have in the book.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big differences would be that the exercise, as I present it, is not expected to move on into erotic territory.
Right. Yeah, that's an important distinction. Talk more about that, Linda.
It is designed, you know, to help you discover how much pleasure
mm-hmm.
experience, even when it does not go, you know, into the more obvious territory.
Mm-hmm.
So, with the foot caress, which, by the way, it's a traditional exercise that is used by surrogates who work with sex therapists. And, of course,
yes.
somewhat
yes.
controversial concept. It was highlighted in the movie The Sessions
mm-hmm.
about a year, 2 years, almost 2 years ago now.
Yes, it was.
But, you know, one of the big mythologies of surrogates is that, oh, they isn't that prostitution? They just have sex with somebody who's got sexual problems? Well, it doesn't work that way at all.
Mm-hmm.
One of the classic ways it does work is that after getting to know each other a bit in some sort of, you know, initial meeting, that one of the surrogates in the Los Angeles area always began with this thing called the feet caress.
Yes.
And it involved getting two small tubs of water and having two people sit across from each other in comfortable chairs about mm-hmm. 2 feet apart. And one person is clearly the giver or the washer.
Yes.
Caresser, and the other one is going to receive.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this mention you had of lemon there because
mm-hmm.
in my version, it involves putting a water softener into the water.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it feel better. It's just, you know, a little more slippery and so forth. It also has a wonderful scent.
Yes.
And the person who is giving the caress washes the foot with some, you know, mild soap, and
mm-hmm.
then rinses it in the separate tub and wraps it. This is a little bit of a ritual, you can kind of sense.
Ritual, yes.
And then very attentively and carefully starts caressing the person's foot.
Mm-hmm.
Usually starting with the ankle area,
mm-hmm.
just moving down to the foot, and placing that foot, by the way, on the giver's thigh so that
mm-hmm.
the giver has access to both sides of the foot at the same time. You know, you've got
the sole as well as the upper surface.
And start stroking, and as I say, I think the key words would be attentively,
mm-hmm.
lovingly,
mm-hmm.
And with some attention to detail. For example, you can vary the speed with which one is stroking the foot and making sure that, say, a little baby finger goes through between the toes, because
mm-hmm.
anybody who's had a foot manicure, pedicure.
That's right.
Knows that there's something a little more interesting about between the toes than most of us thought.
Uh-huh.
Haven't experienced that.
Yeah.
And the pad underneath the big toe.
Yes, you mentioned that in your book.
Yeah.
I think that's quite good because there, when we talk about nerve endings and reflexology, there's got to be a lot of nerve endings in that area.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it may even involve seeing whether fingernails are well received or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it does release a lot of tension for people.
Yes.
It does. It's so nourishing. It's so, wow, you're doing this for me? This is pretty cool.
Well, in the Bible, it says Jesus washed people's feet.
Oh, that's a great point. That's
yeah.
Point.
And so it's an act of devotion.
Uh-huh. And again, the idea is to find these wonderful pleasure centers that are all over the body.
Mm-hmm. Yes, too many people get stuck between the legs. There are all of these erotic possibilities, right?
You know, not part of the foot, this bathing ritual, but
yeah.
So some people have certainly experienced having their toes sucked, particularly.
Yes.
And I know we have reported documents of people who reach orgasm that way.
Yes, and to imagine that each toe, if you're sucking toes, and of course you do maybe do want to do the bathing ritual first so you have very clean feet, but sucking toes, each toe is like a little penis.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, imagining that and sucking, especially you can do that well on the big toe.
Yeah.
And I think you make a very good point here in your book, Love Skills. If your feet are ticklish, try to overcome it by desensitizing your feet.
Right.
You suggest going barefoot, and I know I spent my summers in Idlewild going, the mountains above Palm Springs, going barefoot a lot. So,
yes.
I have good feet, actually.
Great.
Is that supposed to be very healthy for the feet as long as you're...
Oh, yes. And walking, for example, walking barefoot in the sand.
Oh, yes. And you can do that where you live.
Higher foot. Yeah, that's right. It's a really important exercise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people also even enjoy, in terms of becoming aware of the feet and developing good strength, of picking up marbles with the toes.
Oh, right. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because then you get more dexterity.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So let's also cover the hand massage, because you said there was a pioneering surrogate.
Right.
In the Los Angeles area, Adele Kennedy. And what did she say about the hand massage?
She wrote a wonderful book called Touching for Pleasure. And, she wrote it in the 80s.
Yes.
And she wound up saying that, and like many of us, she really talked about hands, feet, face, you know,
mm-hmm.
and a choice when they're receiving. But that, frankly, in her view, the hand caress was the very most important size that a couple could do. And I actually did this in a little workshop that I led when I wrote the first edition of the book. And, of course,
yes.
Great about it was that it was something that could be done in a, you know, public venue without any difficulties.
Yes.
And, I think I want to call it almost like breaking ice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Somebody is stroking your hand in a loving way. It just makes you feel so connected and close and good-willed
mm-hmm.
at each other.
It mm-hmm.
lets the bad will evaporate, I think is what I'm saying. And it's also an exercise where you very much get to practice, which is true of all of them, but that, and I think you can imagine it, even if you do this to yourself, it's possible to give oneself a hand caress.
Yes, and even a hug, you say, with a yoga pose.
And it's so nourishing, but the catch is to be noticing as a giver how good it feels, not just as the receiver, but that the task of the giver is to focus on what am I really enjoying about this?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Am I really noticing about my partner's hand that maybe I never noticed before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very important, to tune in and even to have some fun with it
yeah.
as the giver.
Oh,
to enjoy, bringing this sort of pleasure and relaxation to your partner.
Yes.
So what about the face? Let's talk a little bit about the face, the face caress.
The face caress is, again, the same. And my experience with working with couples is it's so intriguing that, you know, one person's meets another's poison. So you will hear somebody say, oh, you could never touch my feet. Oh, you could never touch my face. And others saying, you can only touch my face. So the face caress is similar, and there's a variety of positions it can be done in, which makes it kind of a nice thing. One person could be seated in a chair, and the giver could actually be behind them standing.
She
just had a conference once, a demonstration of it.
Uh-huh.
That's how it was done. But you could also be doing it with the giver sitting, say, against a wall. I'm thinking about a bed and the wall, and the receiver with the back to the giver's chest.
Yes.
That's another position. But we're back to the same principle, that you are stroking the face with a variety of movements, doing them slowly, attentively. I will introduce one, even though I've said caressing. I think the face is a little bit sometimes is an exception in terms of helping to relax somebody. It's amazing what it feels like to have somebody pressing a little bit more firmly along the brow, the eyebrows.
Yes, or the temples.
Yes.
And I'm doing it right now as we speak, and it feels good.
Yeah, good. I'm doing my brow.
Yes.
So you can experiment with pressure. You can do most of it softly, but you can try a little more pressure.
Right.
Obviously getting the neck.
Mm-hmm.
And the nape of the neck.
Yes.
Then we could actually call it a head caress, if you like, because
mm-hmm.
a finger stroking through the hair feels delicious to many people.
A little side story. I have a daughter and a son who are now in their 30s. But when they were little, I had a ritual, a bedtime ritual with them, where I would sing to them and rub their heads.
Uh-huh.
And to this day, they still like to have their heads rubbed.
Uh-huh.
I don't get a chance as the mother these days to do it much, but it is. It's very nice, and it helped them go to sleep, and it helped with the mother-child bonding. I thought it was lovely.
Sure.
And
bonding is a great word to be using with a couple as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm thinking that also, holding your partner's face,
yes,
in your hands on each side of the,
yes,
the head, that's very intimate. And that can harken back to when you were a baby and your mother touched you that way.
Right.
Now, that usually is not a conscious memory, but it feels intimate.
What I think you're bringing up, and it's why... as an enrichment exercise, I think these exercises are all pretty well received. If we're in a little bit more clinical setting,
mm-hmm.
some people, this is really scary. It is, you know,
it is
intimacy. And one solution to that is
mm-hmm.
say, okay, typically you do this for 15, 20 minutes, but how about if you try 3 to 5 minutes?
Right. That's a good suggestion, Linda, yes.
For doing it.
Right. So we're back to approximation, baby steps.
Yes, and you're also helping people, encouraging them to talk afterwards
mm-hmm.
about what the experience was like.
To process.
Exactly. And, mm-hmm. And that can often lead to some breakthroughs.
Yes, and maybe this is a good place to segue into what I promised the listeners at the top, and we're not going to have enough time to do this justice, so, well, we'll come back to it July the 1st when you return.
Sure.
But tips for anxious moments, because a lot of people do have anxious moments, and what we just talked about, you say baby steps. successive approximation.
Right.
Just expand on that a little bit, please.
Well, and different people will have different degrees of what they need.
Mm-hmm.
The baby step.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that in the approach I endorse, I don't think people should be utterly intimidated or it just boomerangs to be super anxious. I don't think they should be, if I have a tinge of anxiety, I'm not going to do it. You know, you want... I'm comfortable and where I feel a tinge, but that's all I feel. And then once you become comfortable at whatever level that is, you keep moving and expanding and doing a little bit more of whatever it might be that you're attempting to do. You know, if it's a foot caress, if it's a face caress, you establish what could undo anxiety.
Yeah, that's important. You establish what could undo anxiety.
Yeah, and that can be as part of the process, of course, as we both know, is the setting and getting rid of distractions and creating an environment that isn't tense-filled, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want blaring televisions and things like that happening. And then I do go on to talk about one of those other basics, which is relaxation, and sometimes people even refer to it as deep muscle relaxation.
And you expand on that in your book.
Right. And
progressive, you call it also progressive relaxation.
Right. That is one of the classes for it. And some of the things that I discuss for anxious moments are actually things for people to do possibly on their own before they try doing something with a partner.
Uh-huh.
Although technically progressive relaxation could be done together if both do that. And, you know, it's one of those classic of start deep breathing.
Yep.
And then focus on the hands and arms, and some people would systematically tense them and release them, tense them, release them for several repetitions, moving to the face, head, and neck area, the chest and lower stomach area, the buttocks, the lower legs, and the feet. And doing that systematic tense, release, and thinking along the same lines with a self-suggestion like feeling relaxed and calm, letting go more and more, I'm feeling good, whatever expression a person particularly enjoys.
And these are, and you
yes, there
go
is.
Into this in your book, affirmations.
Yes.
Short, positive statements.
Right, right.
And that, what we know is that people who are depressed often do lots of negative self-talk.
Right. And yes, we can call it negative or distress-maintaining.
Yes, I like that expression. You use that in the book, distress-maintaining self-talk. And you replace that with self-soothing self-talk, and that's so important.
Right, right.
Because you also describe automatic thoughts, irrational beliefs, and so many people have done this for years, and it's really hard to get those automatic thoughts.
Right. It is one of
out of their heads.
Easier said than done, but,
yeah.
You know, you have to start somewhere, and you have to start practicing. And coming up with, I have one I use with myself.
Yeah, tell me.
It's
tell us.
Good baby. Good baby.
Good baby.
Yeah. I know I'm being kind to myself.
Yeah.
Good job. Good girl.
Yeah.
Excellent. So I'm infantilizing myself. But I mean, this is the way you talk to children and animals.
Right.
You want to reward them, and I deserve being rewarded as well as anybody else, you know.
Of course.
So
I think, Linda, when you come back, and thank goodness you're coming back because there's so much to discuss. I mean, this whole business of using short positive statements, the affirmations, are really, really important. So we need to expand on that.
Sure.
And using some repetition and making a change in your relationship, which is so difficult for so many people. I often say that one sign of good mental health is having a high tolerance for ambiguity.
Yes, that's true.
I happen to have that, but lots of people don't. They don't like change. They're not very good at resilience. So, you know, I've always in my life, well, not always, but for a good part of my life, I've kind of embraced change, and that's helped me deal with all the different places I've lived and the death of my last husband and,
right,
you know, many things. So we'll talk more about resilience and more in terms of your excellent tips about for anxious moments. And you said that that in reviewing or reading reviews of your book, a lot of people really appreciated that.
Yes, it was comforting to me to know, and also fascinating that mm-hmm. when I ask, you know, reams of students who've read my book, what was mm-hmm. the most valuable part?
Yeah.
That a definite percentage say, oh, those tips for anxious moments.
Yep. So we'll talk more about that. I want our listeners to go to loveskills.com. That's how they can get your excellent book, Love Skills. It's just terrific. I congratulate you. And, of course, your other book that we've talked about on this program, I think, last year.
Yes.
Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit on July 1st, too, because it deserves about your gourmet.
That sounds great.
Yeah. All right, Linda. Thank you so much for being a guest on this program again today.
It was great fun. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Everybody. Have fun. Bye-bye.